We're going to hold a public radio public hearing on the proposed state budget during our big question segment this hour and ask you, what would you change, if anything, about Governor Walker's budget plan? I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8.5 minutes past 7 o'clock on this Wednesday, March 18th. The legislature's Budget Writing Committee, the Joint Finance Committee, starts a series of public hearings on the state budget today in Brilliant, then Friday in Milwaukee, Monday in Rice Lake, and next Thursday in Reedsburg. The schedule and locations are posted on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Maybe you will plan to attend one of those hearings. What are you going to say? Maybe you can't attend one of those hearings. Well, then use this opportunity to sound off on the budget proposal that concerns you the most. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We are going to talk about the major budget proposals and the controversies over many of them, from the UW system cuts to K-12 education, from transportation to state parks, long-term health care to whatever else you are concerned about or that you strongly support. And we will welcome your questions for our guest political scientist. David Cannon is a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Thanks very much for being here. And I'm just going to say right off the bat, obviously, you are an employee of the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I am an employee of the University of Wisconsin Extension, and the state budget and the proposed cuts to the UW system affect both of us. So that being said, let's proceed. The state is currently facing a $2 billion projected budget shortfall. How did we get to where we are?
Well, some of this is certainly self-inflicted, and some of it is just that the economy didn't grow as quickly as the state had projected. And so the self-inflicted part comes from the tax cuts that were enacted when Governor Walker first came into office. And by Governor Walker's own claims, that's projected to yield about $2 billion in tax cuts for Wisconsin taxpayers. And he's made this claim about a year ago that over the four-year period there'd be $2 billion in tax cuts. This has been examined by PolitiFact and other neutral observers, and they agree that $2 billion number is about correct. Now, in terms of saying that that then can be directly translated into the $2.2 billion shortfall we have, that's a little more complicated, because clearly those tax cuts have something of a stimulative impact on the economy. And so without those tax cuts, we wouldn't have had quite as much economic activity. And so it's hard to make a direct translation from $2 billion in tax cuts to $2.2 billion in a shortfall. It's a little bit too neat to make that direct translation. However, clearly some large portion of this $2.2 billion projected shortfall would not be in place had they not had the big tax cuts back when Governor Walker first came into office.
Yeah. When Governor Walker first came into office, he was facing a projected budget shortfall of, I believe, $3.5 billion or so.
Right, yeah, $3.6 billion.
Yeah, and that was a crisis, but this is not.
Well, right. So the politics of the projected budget shortfalls changes depending on whether you're inheriting one or whether you're in the driver's seat overseeing one. And so when the governor first came into office, that projected shortfall, he said this is a crisis and we have to do dramatic things, Act 10, and the other budget cuts to deal with that budget shortfall. Now he's saying that, well, this $2.2 billion shortfall is just a projected shortfall, that things will change, more money will come in, this is just the wish list of agencies asking for what they want. But this is the same number that we always have at this time of the year. Nothing has changed. It's not a number made up by the media. It comes from his own government agencies that give him these projected budget shortfalls. So the numbers are real as of today. Now, those numbers will change early in May when we get the new revenue numbers, and that's what a lot of the Joint Finance Committee members are talking about, is when those new revenue numbers come in, maybe the cuts for K-12 and for transportation for UW won't need to be as deep as projected right now. And so the governor's correct that this is a dynamic process, that $2.2 billion is not written in stone, but that was also true back in January, March 2011.
Yeah. Well, before we get into the nuts and bolts, though, let's talk about the Joint Finance Committee is holding this series of four public hearings on the proposed state budget. I wanted to ask you if as a political scientist, whether the public input that is received at these public hearings will be listened to, will be incorporated in a final state budget.
Absolutely. Now, the state legislators do listen to their constituents, and they do listen to interested parties around the state, and that's why they have these hearings. And one just small bit of evidence on that, on how quickly something can change. You might remember the firestorm a few weeks ago about the Wisconsin idea and eliminating that from the language of the Wisconsin idea from the state budget. There was a firestorm over that, and just a matter of 24 hours, the governor reversed position on that and said, well, okay, there was an oversight, we didn't mean to do that, and they changed the language. So when there is a strong reaction and consistent strong reaction from, especially when it comes from both sides of the aisle, both Democrats and Republicans, if they're Democratic and Republican legislators are hearing from their constituents that something needs to change and is kind of bipartisan, then usually things will change.
Yeah, and I do want to go right into the proposed $300 million cut to the University of Wisconsin system, but the first thing that occurred to me when you said that if there's enough of a public outcry over something and a bipartisan outcry, it is likely to make a difference. What's so, looking at this budget, there are so many major overhauls or cuts, massive cuts and big changes, that it's hard to decide who to stand up for. If you could only change one thing. I mean, $300 million to the University of Wisconsin system, eliminating state taxpayer dollars for the state parks, cutting a public broadcasting, having K-12 have to struggle with funding issues, having this long-term care program for the people with disabilities and the elderly getting big changes. I mean, there's so much. Some have said this sounds like divide and conquer. I wonder if you want to react to that.
Well, I suppose there's some truth in that, because certainly every constituency is going to fight hardest for the thing that affects them most directly. But if you have a whole menu of all of the things you just mentioned and many more that are being cut, it is hard to galvanize concerted opposition against the entire package of things. And legislators do have to make priorities. And that's the purpose of these hearings right now, is to figure out, okay, what are we going to try to maybe reduce the cuts a bit? And one interesting thing just came out yesterday is we now appear to have a slightly different set of priorities between the Assembly and the Senate. Where in the Assembly, it appears that the order is K-12, UW, transportation, and in the Senate, it appears to be more. The K-12 is still top, but then transportation second, UW maybe third or even lower. And so that's going to have to be fought out now between the Assembly and the Senate. What is the list of priorities? And all the constituents who are then fighting for their favorite cause have to be concerned about that overall list of priorities, because everything can't be saved, obviously.
Right. Well, this can lead us into another dispute between the Assembly and the Senate. Was in the news yesterday. We talked with Assembly Speaker Robin Voss yesterday on the show about the proposed UW cuts and autonomy. He was saying he favored a smaller cut and maybe no autonomy, because he didn't think the Board of Regents was going to use that power to change anything. But apparently the Senate Majority Leader, while autonomy is also in question, he thinks the $300 million cut should stand. So there's a dispute over that.
Right. There's a pretty big difference right now. So, Speaker Voss yesterday was saying he thought more in the neighborhood of $200 million might be reasonable. But it does appear that the public authority, the autonomy for the UW system, is in jeopardy right now. Both leaders have said they will allow the governor, who is still supporting this, by the way, he still says that he supports the public authority. The chancellor is still firmly behind this. The system president is firmly behind this. And so the UW leadership wants this to happen. And so the leaders of the Assembly and the Senate said, we'll give the governor and the UW leadership one more chance to make their pitch. But I think their phrase was, it's on life support, that it's hanging in there just barely. And so that would be worst case nightmare scenario for the university, is they get the $300 million cut without the autonomy and independence to be able to come up with more revenue down the road.
We have just a minute before a news break. Why is why would the state legislature, the Joint Finance Committee, say the autonomy is on life support? Why would they not want that?
Well, the biggest concern is raising tuition. They're okay with the procurement independence, I think. Most of them are okay with the construction independence, to have that, you know, bidding process for construction, have more independence on that. It's the tuition they're concerned about. And they're worried about giving the UW system complete autonomy over decisions on raising tuition.
Yeah. Well, we'll talk more about the proposed $300 million cut for the UW system, but we'll also talk about some other major budget proposals in the proposed state budget, including funding for K through 12 education and transportation and what else. And we are asking you in this big question, what would you change about the proposed state budget? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is The Big Question on the Ideas Network. How would you change the proposed state budget? That's today's big question. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a political scientist, political science professor, David Cannon from the University of Wisconsin-Madison, about some of the politics and policy involved in the state budget, and we are welcoming your questions and your views. We also invite you to vote in our online poll, which is at WPR.org/joy. We've also linked it to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. And you will see there that the legislature's Joint Finance Committee begins a series of four public hearings on the state budget today. And we're asking you, what would you change from this year's proposed, it's actually a two-year budget. And you can say nothing. You can say Department of Natural Resources and state park funding. You can vote for K through 12 education funding, University of Wisconsin system funding, transportation borrowing, family care and IRIS long-term care overhauls, or something else. So that's the big question online. We have a number of callers who have questions or views. So let's go to Mike and Racine. Hello, Mike. Uh-oh. Wait a minute. Let me push the right button. Now I think we can hear you, Mike. Mike, are you there?
Yes, I am. Good
morning. Go ahead.
I have a global issue, and I have a particular issue. I'm on the school board in Racine. I'm heading to Madison to talk to legislators today. My global issue, first of all, is not taking Medicaid. 73% of Wisconsinites in referendum last year voted to take the Medicaid, and that's $340 million that we could have to offset our enormous deficit. My specific question relates to Racine County, or Racine Unified School District, where 300% of people in poverty may receive a voucher. For the rest of the state, it's only 185% of poverty. So they're singling out Racine and punishing us, in a sense, in a very inequitable way. Yeah. So those are my two issues, and one of which I'll be speaking about today in Madison. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike. Let me, though, before you go, you're saying that sure. the school voucher program proposal treats Racine unfairly?
That's right.
Yeah. So,
if you're 3% of poverty, you can get a voucher in Racine Unified District. Around the state, it's only 185% of poverty. Voucher program is designed to serve people in poverty, not people at 300% of poverty.
All right. Thanks very much. Mike concerned about the effects of the voucher program on his school in Racine.
Right. So first, just on the bigger issue he raised initially, the Medicaid and the decision not to take the federal money on Medicaid. And that is something that I think is worth pointing out, that would at least address part of this big budget shortfall if we did take the money from Medicaid. And Republican governors in the upper Midwest have decided to do this. In Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, all states with Republican governors have decided to take the Medicaid money just because it's too expensive not to, basically. And so I think there will be continued pressure in the future to look at the Medicaid money, especially when it comes to these trade-offs that we're having to make right now between that and K-12 education. On K-12 education, there are two big issues there, and Mike has touched on one of them. One is the expansion of the voucher program, and that is something that the public school supporters are concerned about, because you drain away money from the public schools when you have students taking the private vouchers. Basically, the public school loses that amount of money that would have gone to that student that then goes to the private voucher. And Mike is right that Racine will have a larger expansion of that program potentially than the rest of the state because of the cutoff of people who are eligible to receive those vouchers, and it is over three times the poverty rate, which gets well up into the middle class to upper middle class even that would be eligible for these vouchers. And I think that is a legitimate concern to raise. The second part on K-12 is the losing the $150 per student aid payment that public schools had received over the last 2 years. That's going away in this budget. And so every public school system around the state is saying that's going to hurt. That cut's really going to be hard to deal with.
Yeah, and in fact, there's a story in the news that there are more than 50 schools at last count or at our count that are asking, are going to go to referendum to ask their communities right. for a hike in property taxes because they're saying if without the hike in funding, they're in big, big trouble.
Right, that's right. And so you're seeing this increasingly around the state where the boards have to go to voters to get the money they need just to keep the same level of funding they had in the previous year, basically.
Yeah. Let's go next to Chris in Saratoga. Hi, Chris.
Hi, Joy. My comment is that you step back and look at this governor, that he seems to make a budget based on attacking his political rivals or opponents. If you look at the protesting in Madison over his Act 10, and WPR provides objective news reporting, I think it explains why he wants to make cuts in those areas.
Thanks very much, Chris. Obviously, I'm an employee of Wisconsin Public Radio, so I am affected by the cuts not only to the University of Wisconsin system or the proposed cuts, but the cuts to the Educational Communications Board, where about more than $5 million was eliminated from the ECB budget. Let me awkwardly ask you, Professor Cannon, maybe more broadly, is the governor going after political enemies in this budget?
Well, I mean, it's easy to see how Chris and other listeners, you know, can maybe come to that conclusion by looking at specific parts of the budget where there are cuts being given to people who have opposed the governor in the past. But I think it's also consistent and probably, you know, closer to what's really going on to look at the governor's position as a fiscal conservative, as a Republican who believes in small government. And so I think most of these cuts are consistent with that vision of a smaller regulatory state, a state that spends less money, that, you know, gives more money back to the taxpayers. I mean, I think all of these cuts are consistent with that general philosophy. And so sometimes what's happening in a budget can be interpreted from multiple lenses. And again, Chris's interpretation certainly is one that, you know, many people share that view. I think the alternative perspective would be the one that Governor Walker supporters would point out, hey, this is just about small government.
Yeah, and I'm going to at least point out that I don't believe Wisconsin Public Radio is anyone's enemy. we are certainly just reporting and talking about issues that affect our state from many different perspectives. And but let's talk a little bit about Governor Walker, who hasn't officially announced yet, but is quite certainly planning on running for president. He is on the presidential campaign trail. How much does that have to do with this state budget?
Well, yeah, I think this also is one of the many factors that come into explaining the tone and the nature of the budget. And, you know, the Democratic State Party has been calling this Iowa caucus budget. You know, so they're being very explicit about their claim that this is all about presidential politics. And again, I think that's probably overstating the case. But you can point to some parts of the budget that I think probably are aimed at those more conservative Republican primary and caucus voters that Governor Walker will have to appeal to if he wants to get the presidential nomination. Things like the drug testing for programs like, you know, food stamps. That's something that, you know, it's not really been an issue here in Wisconsin, but it's something that nationally that has been getting some attention in more conservative Republican states. So I think that's a good way for Governor Walker to appeal to some of the more conservative-based voters. And so that and also the holding the line on taxes, you know, saying that we're not going to, you know, increase taxes at all. That's something that's pretty much a requirement, I think, in Republican primaries these days to, you know, be opposed to raising taxes. So there are plenty of issues that point in that direction of saying this is, you know, at least will be consistent with his campaign for the presidency.
I'm Joy Cardine talking with David Cannon, who is a professor of political science at UW-Madison. We are talking about the proposed state budget, which will go before the public, the first of four public hearings on the proposed state budget taking place today in Brilliant before the legislature's Joint Finance Committee. There will be another one on Friday in Milwaukee, another one on Monday in Rice Lake, and another one next Thursday in Reedsburg. So what would you say? What would be your testimony before the Joint Finance Committee on the state budget? If you could change something in the state budget, what would it be? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Jason on Facebook says, increase school funding. Having school districts cut more than $1 million from their budget while at the same time increasing vouchers is hurting our schools, our communities, and most importantly, our children and grandchildren. Well, we talked a little bit about that already, but do you have some thoughts on the impact of this kind of cuts to K-12 education?
Yeah, well, the good news for Jason and other supporters of K-12 education is that I think K-12 is the number one on the state legislature's priority list, both in joint finance and in the Senate and Assembly leadership, to reduce the cuts. I think that's pretty consistent from what I've heard from Fitzgerald and Voss and the joint finance people, that they want to reduce the size of those cuts for K-12. And so I think that there is a broad understanding that the K-12 education has had some rough budgets already in the last several years. So to have another fairly tough budget this next 2 years coming up would be would do some damage to public education. So I think there is commitment from the leadership in the state legislature to reduce the size of those cuts, because I think the cuts would be devastating for some school districts.
Yeah, and we didn't really talk about the effects of, you said that it would be the worst case scenario for the UW system to have the full $300 million cut and no independence or flexibility or autonomy,
right,
with the public authority. How devastating is that?
That would be an awfully difficult cut to absorb. Talking about, a 13% cut in state aid to the UW system over 2 years. Many colleges, universities around the state, especially the two-year campuses, but even Eau Claire has come out this last week saying they'd have pretty substantial layoffs if you had those kinds of cuts. You can't deal with a cut of 13% by just dealing with the cuts through attrition for a lot of these campuses. And so there would be layoffs. There would be less access to classes for students. Length to graduation would increase for many students, so you'd have fewer students graduating in 4 years. So these would be cuts that would be felt pretty substantially throughout the UW system if it came without that public authority autonomy.
All right, so the proposal is to cut hundreds of millions from education, but it is to borrow money to pay for transportation. Tell us why the governor wants to borrow for transportation.
Right. So the concern on the borrowing, and again, this has had substantial pushback in the state legislature, both from Democrats and Republicans, who are concerned about the $1.3 billion transportation borrowing, which would mean that going forward, about a quarter of the money spent on transportation would be spent on financing the debt. Only 3/4, so 3 cents out of every four would go to actually building roads and highways and other transportation things. A quarter of that would go to just paying off the debt. And so for many state legislators, that's really not a responsible way to proceed, because that means fewer of our tax dollars are actually going to the purpose that they're supposed to, which is to help transportation. And so the roadblock here, of course, is not wanting to have higher taxes, having either an increase in the gas tax or other increases in user fees. There's even been some talk about toll roads as a way of bringing in some money. But those are all controversial approaches that, especially among the Republican leaders, they really don't want to raise fees or the gas tax. And so unless you do that, that would mean that the money would have to come out of general program revenue then instead of the dedicated revenues. There's not tremendous support for that either, but maybe that's the direction we might go if the borrowing figure is just too high.
Yeah, and you have a sense that there's enough pushback as even in the Republican Party that we may not be borrowing $1 billion for transportation?
Yeah, I think that number is going to change. I think that there, at least from what I've heard from this the legislative leaders, is that they are really uncomfortable borrowing that much money for a highway. So I think there'll be some effort at least to reduce that borrowing amount and figure out some way to pay for transportation other than borrowing that much.
Well, you're speaking of user fees. The governor is proposing that the state parks system receive no taxpayer dollars and subsist on the money that they would raise from fees, including hike in park stickers and camping and such. What's the reasoning behind a cut like that?
Well, clearly the governor thinks that this is something that the people who benefit from the parks directly should be the ones, paying for the parks. That's not the way that we've viewed the park system in the past. We've viewed it more as a collective benefit, that, this is a collective good provided to the state. Anyone should be able to use the parks at least a reduced kind of fee, not bearing the full cost of what it would be to camp in a state park or go for a hike in a state park. And so there here again is just, I think, a difference in approaches to, what state government tax dollars should be used for. Should it be used for, providing some collective goods like public parks, or should more of the burden be on people who are enjoying those benefits? And so there is some, I think, some inconsistency between taking the position that people who go to state parks should bear the full cost, but yet then the university, when they want to raise tuition on students, to say, well, you maybe should bear a little bit more of the cost than just one-fifth of what your cost of your education is, then the governor the state legislature, right, the governor actually is in favor of the public authority, but a lot of people in the state legislature say, well, we shouldn't have that ability to pay more of the market price, basically, for that public good that's provided. So it's a hot button issue for sure. The supporters of the public parks are really very concerned about this, that they're worried that some parks might have to close, that you wouldn't be able to support the parks just by user fees.
Yeah, and we've just a couple of minutes before the news, so I want to finish up on the DNR related items that have been subject to controversy. There is one, we're talking about borrowing for transportation, but a halt to making purchases from the stewardship fund, which
right.
Buys property to preserve for conservation and recreation. So what's the deal with that?
Right. Again, so the budget kind of going different directions depending on what the goal is. That if the goal is to be able to put more money into transportation, it's okay to borrow, but not if you're actually buying up lands to protect the environment in the future. Another DNR concern is the citizen review boards. Another thing that is one of these many sort of non-policy parts of the budget too, along with the GAB and the Judicial Commission and the oversight boards for profit higher education, that are all parts of this budget as well, that would limit the kind of regulatory reach that we've had long established in many of these areas. And many supporters of the DNR, as well as on the Judicial Commission, even Annette Ziegler came out opposed that, saying that Supreme Court should not be overseeing this. We need an independent Judicial Commission to investigate judicial misconduct. And so there's been quite a lot of pushback on those regulatory changes as well. And the DNR Citizen Review Boards is an important one example of that.
Well, and very quickly, we have just a minute before news. There's the proposal for the DNR budget that would cut 66 total positions, including 18 science positions.
Right. Yeah, so DNR is taking a pretty big hit overall. And so not only changes in the regulatory structure, state parks, the land purchasing program, but also positions, especially in the science area, that are going to be reduced as well.
When we come back, we'll talk about the changes to the long-term home health care programs. We'll talk about any other items in the budget that you want to change. It is our big question, and that's what we are asking you. What would you change about the proposed state budget? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us @Joy Cardine Show. We also have our poll online. It's linked to Facebook and at WPR.org/joy. David Cannon is our guest, a professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. The legislature's Joint Finance Committee begins a series of four public hearings on the proposed state budget today in Brilliant. We are talking about the major proposals within the budget with a guest political scientist, David Cannon, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. And we are inviting you to weigh in on what, if anything, you would want to change about the proposed state budget in this week's big question. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Carol on Facebook asks, this budget increases spending in spite of all these cuts. How is that possible? There's also a story that said it increases fees and taxes, this budget does, by now I don't remember, maybe close to $50 million.
Right, $48 million, I think, was the there was an article in the State Journal, I think it was, in the Journal Sentinel, I think it was the day before yesterday, talking about the increase in fees and other taxes of about $48 million over the next 2 years. The governor's office has objected to that figure because they point out there'd be about $300 million in property tax reductions in his bill. And so he says that overall the net effect is reducing taxes by about $250 million.
And one of the big areas that we haven't gotten to yet was the subject of a big demonstration at the state capitol yesterday. The rotunda was filled with advocates for people who have disabilities and other senior groups and the like, very upset with this overhaul of programs that provide assistance for people with disabilities and elderly who need home health care. Can you explain what's going on here, Professor Cannon?
Yes, this is the IRIS program that they're talking about, which is for people with long-term disabilities. And right now, under the current system, it's more of a community-based choice system where there are community providers for long-term care. And what would happen under the new program is that everyone would be put into this state-run program with a single insurer. And the opponents, anyway, of the program are saying that people would lose the choice of their provider. In a way, it's some of the same debates we had about Obamacare, you know, where Republicans were on the other side of that issue, saying we shouldn't have just this, you know, one sort of, you know, overall national system. We should have individual choice to a greater degree. But now it's kind of being flipped on its head here when you look at local control versus the more state-run system, with the governor's proposal now advocating for this more state-run system. From what I've been able to read about this, it seems like there's a lot of uncertainty of exactly how this would play out. The governor's office is saying, well, it's really not as bad as people are saying, that we still would have a fair amount of choice. So it's really hard to know exactly how this would play out.
Yeah, and we have Lisa on Facebook who says, leave long-term care alone. Family care, IRIS, and senior care work. So saying, I guess, if it's not broke, don't fix it.
Yeah, another thing, too, on health care that we should just mention briefly, because this could potentially affect Wisconsin in a big way, is the Supreme Court's decision that'll come down in June about the health care exchanges. Because Wisconsin, as you might remember, opted out of setting up its own state-run exchange and allowed healthcare.gov, the national healthcare exchange, to be our place where you could go buy health insurance. Well, the Supreme Court will rule in June whether or not you can qualify for subsidies if you got your insurance on the federal-run exchange, because this narrow reading of the statute says that only the state exchanges should be able to be eligible for subsidies. So if the Supreme Court rules in that direction, people in Wisconsin who purchased insurance on the national exchange will actually lose their subsidies. And that could have a huge impact on health care in our state and many others around the country.
Let me go to Bernie in Elkhorn. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to poke a hole in that myth that Scott Walker is for smaller government. He's spending hundreds of millions on highways we don't need. He's putting millions into the Bucks arena. And with respect to the drug testing, that's going to cost the taxpayers money. If he wanted to save the taxpayers money, he'd do what Washington, Colorado, and a couple other states have done and legalize and tax marijuana. You know, cut down on the prison costs, the law enforcement costs. But it's all ideology for him, and the only thing he wants to cut is anything that has to do with a common good.
Well, a reaction to that, Professor Cannon.
Well, yeah, so I think Bernie has a legitimate point there on specifically on the drug testing. Most people who've looked at this say that it probably would, you know, cost the government more money than it would save. I think the ideology behind that, and I think Bernie's also right that, yeah, I think that a lot of the decisions here are, you know, more generally ideological, but still in across the board aimed at smaller government. And how the drug testing even fits into that category would be that the motivation behind it, at least according to proponents of it, is to reduce the amount of spending on social welfare programs that would go to people who, in their minds, don't deserve the help. And so it's a way of reducing spending, they argue. Now, I think, again, Bernie's right that most studies have looked at this say that it actually probably would cost more than it would save. But that is the motivation behind it, I think, from the supporters, is to say, hey, this is a way of trying to reduce the amount of spending in these programs by making sure the money is going to people who you know, deserve the money.
If you have a question for our guest, we have our guest with us for just a couple more minutes, and then it's our sound-off portion of the big question, we're going to give you an opportunity to just take the stage and you get 30 seconds to say what you would change about the state budget. 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Time for a few more questions for Professor Cannon, and then we'll hold our sound-off segment and give you the opportunity to sound off. Joanne in Neshkoro is with us. Hi, Joanne.
Hi. I'm not sure that people realize that the big cut to the university system also includes a $300,000 cut to the library systems. If that goes through, I don't think our small library will be able to survive anymore. Also, the extension services, the county extension offices, they oversee the 4-H clubs, the HCE, which is homemakers, healthy communities, healthy youth, all those things. They're also very necessary and should not be cut.
Yeah, so the UW cuts affect our libraries, and certainly they affect the extension offices because that's a part of the university system.
Right. So maybe Joanne's talking about the UW system libraries, and certainly there are libraries at all of the UW system campuses, and in some communities, smaller communities especially, that might be the most important library in the community. So certainly the 13% cut would affect UW extension definitely, and then also the UW library system.
Yeah. All right. Thanks, Joanne, for the call. Let's go to Charlie in Milwaukee next. Hi, Charlie.
Hi. I'd like to ask your guest just a comment that it seems that as a conservative, Governor Walker's budget appears to be more aimed at his national ambitions as opposed to doing what's right for the state of Wisconsin. And I was just wondering what his chances of reelection are should he not become president for proposing budgets that really are ideological for a national stage rather than what's good for Wisconsin in and of itself. Thank you.
There's an easy one for you, Professor Cannon.
Well, we touched on that a little bit before about how this, some of the budget anyway could be seen as related to his presidential ambitions. I think probably maybe the best bit of evidence for that might go back to our very first caller on the Medicaid expansion. Where you look at the Republican governors in the upper Midwest who don't have presidential ambitions, Michigan, Ohio, Indiana, they all have taken the Medicaid money. But it is something of a litmus test, I think, for national contenders for the presidential nomination, the Republican Party, is you really can't be in favor of taking the Medicaid money. It's just off the table in a way that, raising taxes is off the table. It's just not up for negotiation. And so I think that that is a good example, of how the presidential ambitions may have colored, to some extent, what would be best for a presidential campaign that might not be best for the voters of the state. And so I think there's something to Charlie's point. And he raises an interesting question about, let's say Governor Walker doesn't get the nomination. Next time he's up for a re-election here, will voters of the state perceive him as having moved too far to the right? And that is certainly a possibility. But I think a lot of Republicans in the state legislature are also resisting some of those moves to the right. And so I don't think we'll have everything in this budget adopted, certainly.
All right. Final question for you. Do you see so May is the magic time when those new revenue numbers come in, when we might see a lessening of some of the cuts here?
That's right. Early May, we should have the new revenue numbers, and they certainly will be better than the $2.2 billion, because in the first quarter of 2015, we saw the best job growth in the country since 1995. And so this was a very quickly expanding job growth, and so this means if more people are working, more taxes are being paid. So the tax revenue numbers should be going up for the state of Wisconsin. Right now, Wisconsin, I believe, is about the median in the upper Midwest in terms of job creation right now. So our numbers definitely will come up in that first quarter. We don't know how much yet at this point, but it should help at least to some extent.
Thank you for being here. David Cannon, a professor of political science at UW-Madison. Now it's your turn to sound off. This is our sound off segment on today's big question. What would you change from the state budget proposal? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You have 30 seconds. And Rashawn in Brookfield, you're first. Go ahead.
Yes. I've always talked about state aid to UW system. I think it's completely false. What the state is doing is paying for a service that the UW system is doing. Is UW system is educating the population of the state for a fee. And if you look at what the UW system is doing, we are rendering the service at a fraction of the cost that a private school would do the same thing. So the state of Wisconsin was supposed to go to a private school, they'll have to pay much more for the same service.
Thank you, Rashawn. 30 seconds to tell us what you would change about the state budget. I think you would have more funding for the UW system. Rick in Milwaukee. Hi, Rick.
Hi. This isn't ever shown in the state budget, but what I would do is stop. I've got relatives that are third-generation AFDC that hardly work. I would stop the incentivizing of that and have a budget set aside, for example, for state-funded vasectomies or other birth control systems, to lower that portion of the budget.
Okay. well, I'm not here to discuss too much, but we're asking what you would change about the state budget. However, we're just about out of time, so I think we're going to leave the on-air comments to that. You can continue to vote in our online poll, which is at wpr.org/joy. It's also linked to the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Last time I checked, most of you would change the K through 12 education funding, and you would change the University of Wisconsin system funding cut. So those are the two front runners in our big question poll. Thanks very much for listening. Thanks to Kayla Blato and to Christy Taylor for producing this hour. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. Much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.